ಜಗದಾಧಾರಿಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ.
I say Mayadhanava then went to the in the Mainika mountain, then he went to that place, what it's called, and the Bindu Sarovar, and then he got brought so many things back. Going thither, O Bharata, Maya brought back the club and the conch shell and the various crystalline articles that had belonged to King Vrishaparva. The great Asura Maya, having gone thither, possessed himself of the whole of the great wealth, which was guarded by Yakshas and Rakshasas. Bringing them, the Asura constructed therewith a peerless palace, which is of great beauty and celebrated throughout the three worlds. He gave unto Bhimasena that best of clubs, and unto Arjuna the most excellent conch shell, at whose sound all creatures trembled in awe. The palace that Maya built consisted of columns of gold, and occupied, O monarch, an area of 5,000 cubits. Oh, I wonder if that's 5,000 meaning it's total, but in any case, it's a lot. The palace possessing an exceedingly beautiful form, like unto that of Agni, Surya, or Soma, shone in great splendor, and by its brilliance seemed to darken even the bright rays of the sun. With the effulgence it exhibited, which was a mixture of both celestial and terrestrial light, it looked as if it was on fire, like unto a mass of new clouds conspicuous in the sky. The palace rose up, coming into view of all. Indeed, the palace that the dexterous Maya built was so wide, delightful, and refreshing, composed of such excellent materials, furnished with golden walls and archways, adorned with so many varied pictures, and was withal so rich and well built, that in beauty it far surpassed Sudharma of the Dashara race, or the mansion of Brahma himself. Eight 8,000 Rakshasas called Kinkaras, fierce, huge-bodied, and endued with great strength, of red coppery eyes and arrowy ears, well-armed and capable of ranging through the sky, used to guard and protect that palace. Within that palace, Maya placed a peerless tank, and in that tank were lotuses with leaves of dark-colored gems and stalks of bright jewels and other flowers, also of golden leaves. Aquatic fowls of various species sported on its bosom, itself variegated with full-blown lotuses and stocked with fishes and tortoises of golden hue. Its bottom was without mud and its water transparent. Not that. Huh? So it's got, you have this big, big water body in the middle of it. Because when you build, there's always, the middle is open. There's always a courtyard. The Brahmastan is always open. So in that Brahmastan is this pond. And so then it was, you know, deep enough that the fish can live in there. It's, you know, so huge. So, I mean, if you're talking about something that's, you know, 2 kilometers by 2 kilometers, probably there's quite a large, the pond, who knows how big it is, but it would be very big. Then it has the jeweled lotuses that are there, plus it also has real lotuses, right? And then it has all the fish, and it has these tortoises that have golden shells, right? And there's no mud on the bottom, so then you can see through it very nicely. You can see through the water, so you can see all the fish and tortoises and everything like that. So then, not bad, not bad. There was a flight of crystal stairs leading from the banks of the, from the banks to the edge of the water. The gentle breezes that swept along its bosom softly shook the flowers that studded it. So that means it would have to be big enough. It says that it's going so high that you can see it from the distance. Everyone can see it. So the rule on wind is however tall something is, that's how long it's going to take before the wind comes back down to ground level. Does that make sense? you have a 50-foot tall tree, the wind will go up over the tree, and then after 50 feet, it will be on the ground again. Does that make sense? So if you have a multi-story building, then the wind will go up at the top, so it will only drop back down forever how much that is. So for to move the lotuses means the air has to be get down at water level. That means the lake has to be very big, because the palace is already said to be very big. The banks of that tank were overlain with slabs of costly marble, set with pearls. Okay. Marble set with pearls. Beholding that tank, thus adorned all around with jewels and precious stones, many kings that came there mistook it for land and fell into it with eyes open. You know, in other words, looking at it, they're walking, oh, nice, and then they fall into the... like that. Many tall trees of various kinds were planted all around the palace, of green foliage and cool shade, ever blossoming. They were all very charming to behold. So that means in the palace itself, there'll be many, many small courtyards that then have big trees in them, right? And the rule is that, according to Vastu, you know, for, you know, the means you want to be prosperous like this, is that when the sun is straight up and it shines down, there can be no shade from the tree on the building. Does that make sense? Like that? I mean, sadhus and that can live in like that, but, you know, those who are, you know, your general grihasthas wouldn't. So that means the courtyard has to be big enough that a very large tree doesn't give any shade, you know, when it's straight down. Does that make sense? Like that. Artificial woods were laid around, always emitting a delicious fragrance. There were also many tanks that were adorned with swans and karadavas and chakravakas, baimini, brahmini ducks. Chakravakas are brahmini ducks. You know chakravakas? You see them around here. They're the ones, you see them around the water, they're a bit shy. The bottom is very, very round. And a very short tail, long legs, very short tail. And the chest is very white, the back is black. You know, kind of long, thinner necks, long, not too long in the beak. Around here, they're about this big. Like Vrindavan, you see ones this big, but they're like this big. And they're the ones that now and again in the morning or the day, you suddenly hear sounds, you think it's Africa or something like that. It's those guys. Like that. The breeze bearing the fragrance of lotuses growing in the water and those growing on land ministered unto the pleasure and happiness of the Pandavas. Maya, having constructed such a palatial hall within 14 months, reported its completion unto Yudhishthira. Okay. Right. So that means there's many courtyards and many ponds inside. So you have your major ones, and then so, because you can have, technically you would have ponds in the east, northeast, and north. That's bona fide. But to have them in the Brahmastan is actually not correct unless it's above ground. But as we didn't notice it here, but maybe it'll be mentioned later, but Krishna suggested the pond in the middle. Right? So because Krishna suggested it, Maya built it. And the problem with the pond in the Brahmastan is that it doesn't have an immediate effect, but what it will do with time, it will destroy the dynasty, right? So, in other words, the Pandavas used it for, I think, 11 years before the gambling match, you know, and so it didn't give any effect. Then after that, the gambling match, then one of the things that was won was that palace, you know, that hall. So now it's Duryodhana's. Right, and so then over the time, then the other 12 years in the forest and all that, then by the time he gets the Battle of Kurukshetra, then the effect of that pawn takes effect. Right, so Dhritarashtra is the king, means his dynasty will be destroyed, means all his sons were killed. That makes sense. So Krishna's clever, right? Like that. So that was Krishna's idea. Section 4. Shabakriya Parva. Vaishampayana said, "Then that chief of men, King Yudhishthira, entered that palatial sabha, having first fed 10,000 brahmanas with preparations of milk and rice mixed with clarified butter, honey with fruits and roots." This is not right.
Take all them bits out,
yeah. Well, the point is that wouldn't be there anyway.
Why do they write it in?
I think it's no, because the point is means it might be something else. But variant, what's variant? Anyone knows what variant is?
Like,
yeah, unless it's venison. Well, that might be, but the other one, that wouldn't be used.
Yeah.
The king gratified those superior Brahmins who had come from various countries with food seasoned with sesame and prepared with vegetables called jibanti, with rice mixed with clarified butter, with different preparations of meat, indeed various kinds of other food, also numberless viands that were fit to be supped, and innumerable kinds of drinks with new and unused robes, and clothes with excellent floral wreaths. The king also gave unto each of those Brahmins 1,000 kine. O Bharata, the voice of the gratified Brahmins uttering, "What an auspicious day is this," became so loud that it seemed to reach heaven itself. When the Kuru king entered the palatial Shabha, having also worshipped the gods of various kinds of music and numerous species of excellent and costly perfumes, the athletes, mimes, and prize fighters, bards and encomiasts. Oh, people who work on the internet, right? Encomiasts. Like that. It says people who recite eulogies. Began to gratify that illustrious son of Dharma by exhibiting their skill, right? So then, how do you say? So athletes, they'll come and do all kinds of different, you know, physical feats and all that. Mimes, prize fighters, so they'll come together and they'll have fights and everything like that. Bards, you know, they'll sing all kinds of nice songs and stuff like that. Then the encomiasts who recite eulogies. So then all this will be going on, a big show. Yes. Who is stronger, the elephant or the lion? If there's one elephant and one lion, then it's pretty equally matched. See, it's because if the lion is on the ground and the elephant can either step on it, then, you know, how you say, then it, the lion, you would have to study it in the Purana class, right? Okay? Like that. Or another thing is they grab it with its nose, and then with the tusks and that, they squash it into the ground. Right? So that's the other method that the elephant uses. But if there's, but so if there's one on one, it's fairly equally matched. But the lion, they get up onto the back of the neck, and then they bite it there. And if they do that, then that generally means the elephant is your Puranic study for the day, right? So if they go in groups, then the elephant will be busy with the other lions in the front or like that, and then one will jump on the back like that. So, you know, you're not really sure. It's fairly dangerous. You don't see the lions too often going for elephants like that. They're too dangerous. You know, they'll stick to deer and other things like that. Is that okay? Right? But as a personality, I think the lion is stronger, like that, because there'll be more passion and stuff like that. Is that okay? Yes? No? Sure. Okay. Okay, so 14 months you did all this, and notice it says big trees, so they had a way to, you know, move the big trees and all that. So all this stuff, you know, like now they'll build a big 5-star hotel, and then, you know, when it opens, it's got a full garden, you know, with 30-year-old trees and all that. So, you know, it seems to be pretty standard, right? In other words, when you read this, you can see there's nothing new. It's just that before, the difference is now it's pretty small time compared to what it was before. Does that make sense? It's not like that's something different now and there's something more exciting than there was before. No. The thing is in our own tradition, there's plenty to be exciting, just you have to use the tradition. You know, then it becomes interesting, right? When anyone decides a house, no one's designing them with courtyards. You could easily do that, but it's just not done, you know. So, you know, all these different things could happen. Section 4. Oh, no, we were already reading that. Okay, we were down to the mimes. Okay. Thus celebrating his entry into the palace, Yudhishthira with his brothers sported within that palace like Chakra himself in heaven. Upon the seats in that palace sat, along with the Pandavas, rishis and kings that came from various countries. Right, this is on the opening, right? Asita and Devala, Satya and Sarpamali, and Mahishira, Arvavasu, Sumitra, Maitreya, Sunaka, and Vali, Vaka, Dalvya, Stulashira, Krishna Dvaipayana, and Sukha Sumanta, Jaimini, Paila, and the disciples of Vyas, namely ourselves, Titri, Yajnavalkya, and Lomaharshana, with his son, Apsu Lohmya, with his son, okay, that's it. Then Apsuhomya, Domya, Ani Mandavya, and Kaushika, Damosh Nisha, and Traivali, Parnada, Varayanuka, Manyujanya, Vayubaksha, and Parasarya, and Sharika, Valivaka, Shilivaka, Satyapala, and Kriti Shrama. Wow, this just keeps going. Jatukarna and Sikavat, Alamba, Parijataka, the exalted Parvata, and the great Muni Markandeya. Hey, Parvata is the one that always moves around with Narad Muni, like that. Pavitrapani, Savarna, Baluki, and Galava, Jangabanu, Raibhya. Raibhya and Bharadvaj, they're always would spend time together. Raibhya, he was the guru for Bharadvaj's son, and Bharadvaj is the guru for Raibhya's son, right? Because in tradition, you never teach your own son like that. Daughters, you teach your own, but sons, they always someone else will teach them. Kopa Vega and Bhrigu. Hari Vabhru, Kaundinya, Vabhrumali, and Sanatana, Krakshivat, Ashijaj, Nachiketa, and Aushija, Nachiketa, and Gotama, Panga, Varaha, Shunaka, and Sandilya of great ascetic merit, Kukura, Venu Janga, Kalapa and Kata, these virtuous and learned munis with senses and souls under complete control, and many others as numerous, all well skilled in the Vedas and Vedangas, and conversant with rules of morality, pure and spotless in behavior, waited on the illustrious Yudhishthira, and gladdened him by their sacred discourses. So what would here waited mean? Like we hear that the maid's servants or the manservants waited upon the king or the queen. So here it's saying the Brahmins are waiting upon. So what does that mean?
So they were very like attentive. They were just there waiting for the king to come out.
Yeah.
They wouldn't go for work. They were very focused on what the king would need.
Yeah. Okay. Does that make sense? In other words, you're waiting. You're not doing anything that would distract from your interaction with the other person, right? So wait, you just see what they do, you respond to that, you deal with that. So that would be waiting upon. So then, of course, servants they're waiting upon will take on the form of waiting to do menial service. The other will be waiting to interact and, you know, speak shastra, give blessings, you know, and do whatever it is. But so, in other words, it's a service. Even though you're senior, you're still in that position to you know, for a relationship weight on the other person, because this is Yudhishthir's time. Does that make sense? If after the opening and all that, then they come and visit, Yudhishthir will wait upon them. Does that make sense? But this thing is there. So just like you have a marriage, like that, the girl who's being married, then everybody waits on her, right? You know, especially when it's time for her to come for the wedding. That's, you know, the main time you're waiting. But does that make sense? But everybody, it's her day. So even though there's other ladies, senior ladies, they wait on her. It's her day. Does that make sense? You know? Does that make sense? So whatever is the thing, whoever is the prominent person, everyone waits on them. So that makes the relationship work. And so everybody gets their 15 minutes, right? So then everybody gets waited upon. Right? You know, like the person outside banging on the door waiting for you to get out of the bathroom. You know, everybody gets waited on, you know, like that. Okay, and gladden him by their sacred discourses. So that means Yudhishthira had a taste for hearing the Shastra. Yes?
Why is the bride more important than the husband in marriage? Why is the bride more important in the marriages?
Why is the bride more important than what? Than the?
Husband.
Than the husband. Okay. Well, in the samskaras, if we go by samskaras, let's look at it from a few different angles here. If you look at it from samskaras, then the Upanayana rite for the boy is very important, because then it gives him the adhikar to study, you know, the Vedas, to do yajnas, to do so many different things. So of all the samskaras, it's one that's considered spiritual, right? The other ones are basic, except for Vidyarambha, all the other ones are basically more, you know, just dealing with health, dealing with intelligence, dealing with fixed residence, dealing with so many things like that, you know. Then, but so the Upanayanam is you know, your most important one there. So the benefits accrued to the boy from Upanayanam, the same benefits are accrued to the girl through the marriage ceremony. So how purified the boy is at Upanayanam, the girl is purified at the marriage ceremony. Because then also, but one may say, well, what about Upanayana for the girls? You don't have to worry about it, because when she marries the boy, you know, who has Upanayana, she gets half the benefit, right? She doesn't have to do any of the work, she gets half the benefit, right? So, not bad. So then, right, you know, the husband doesn't get in any way ever any part of the wife's credits. You understand? She always gets half of his. He never gets any of hers. But by her chastity, he is protected. Right? So that's the benefit he gets. Because she being a chaste woman, then he is protected. So many calamities that are there won't happen because of that. Right? Like nothing could happen to the Pandavas or anything because of the chastity of their wife. Right? So that would be one thing. Two is that then... it's like you have a man and he gets a new house. So if he has a house opening, what's the most important thing? What does everybody look at? The house, right? But it's the man's house. Right? Does that make sense? But still, the house is the focus of attention. Does that make sense? So in the combination between the man and the woman, then the man is the seed, the woman is the field. Right? Does that make sense? So the field of household activities is going to revolve around the woman. Does that make sense? The field means how you say, the facility for the interaction will be created by the man. But the use of, and let's say you can also say standards of use of all those paraphernalia may be created by the man. But the use of it, what is used, when it's used, how it's used, that's all the wife. Does that make sense? Like that. So then, yeah. Then also we see is that the marriage is arranged by the father, of the girl, right? So therefore it's his arrangement. So then it's happening at his place, so therefore then the daughter becomes the prominent one, right? And then also in the experience, and you could take it, the man's happy that he's gotten, you know, he's found a nice girl, but the experience of the girl will be much greater of this. Like that? You know, in other words, he thinks, oh, I'm great, I got a great wife. But the wife actually gets possession of the man at this time. Does that make sense? Prabhupada gives the example. He's telling that, you know, after the wedding, you know, they have either a car, a carriage, or something, and the couple goes in the carriage, you know, and they're all dressed up and, you know, nicely, and some of the, so depending on the community, they wear crowns or different things like that. So as they're going in this procession, then the man is thinking, yes, I am the king, you know, and this is my queen, and everything's wonderful, right? And then he switches over what the woman's thinking. She thinks, now I have gotten myself a donkey who's going to work for the rest of his life and get me everything I want, right? So you understand? So it's her day. Does that make sense? Like that. Plus, you can dress up. The more you dress up a girl, the better she looks. You dress up the guy too much, he starts to look a little weird, like that. If it's on the front cover of a, you know, a DVD on music, okay, you know, like that. But if it's not, you know, the name of the band is not connected with something to do with feminine royalty, then it looks a bit weird. Okay, is that okay? Is that okay? Anything else here or something? Right. You ever heard of a band called King? So that. Right. Wouldn't fly. They think, you know, these guys are, you know, puffed up, egoistic. It just wouldn't work. You have to take something humble, you know, like some kind of bug, you know, or something like that. Okay? Yeah. They are Shudras, you know. So it's like a Okay. So, any other questions? No? Okay. So, also, numerous principal Kshatriyas. Okay, so that before, those were all Rishis and Munis. Like that. So, when it was saying that the kings and the Munis, it wasn't a mix. That was the list of the Munis. Now we have the list of the kings. Okay. So also numerous principal Kshatriyas, such as the illustrious and virtuous Munjaketu, Vibhadhana, Sangramjit, Dwarmukha, and the powerful Ugrasena, Kshakshena, the Lord of the Earth, Kshemaka, the Invisible, Kamata, the King of Kamboja, and the mighty Kampana, who alone made the Yavanas to tremble at his name, just as the god that wielded the thunderbolt maketh those Asuras, the Kalakeyas, tremble before them. Jatasura and the king of the Madrakas, Kunti, Pulinda, the king of the Kiratas, and the kings of Anga and Vanga. Where is Vanga? Yeah, you're sitting in it, right? Okay. And Poundra and the king of Udara and Andaka, Sumitra and Shaivya, that slayer of foes, Sumanas, the king of the Kiratas, and Chanur, the king of the Yavanas. Devavrata, Boja, and the so-called Bhimarata. What does that mean, the so-called? This must be an archaic English meaning, the one who is called so. And Bhimarata, who is called as such, or something. Shrutayudha, the king of Kalinga, Jayasena, the king of Magadha, and Sukarman, and Chaitanya, right? Ever heard of Chaitanya? Right? And Puru, that slayer of foes, Ketumata and Vasudhana, Vaideha and Kritakshanam, Sudharman, Aniruddha, Shrutayu, endued with great strength, the invincible Anuparaja, the handsome Karmajit, Shishupal with his son, the king of Karusha, and the invincible use of the Vrishni race, all equal in beauty under the celestials, namely Ahuka, Vipritu, Sadha, Sharana, Akrura, Kritavarman, and Satika, the son of Sini, and Bhishmaka, Ankiriti, and the powerful Dyumatsena, those chief of bowmen, namely the Kaikeyas and Yajnasena of the Somaka race. These Kshatriyas endued with great might, all well armed and wealthy, and many others also regarded as the foremost, all waited upon Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, in that Shabha, desirous of ministering to his happiness. Those princes also endued with great strength, who, dressing themselves in deerskins, learnt the science of weapons under Arjuna, waited upon Yudhishthira. O king, the princes also of the Vrishni race, namely Prajumna, the son of Rukmini, Samba and Yuyudhana, the son of Satyaki. Oh, Yuyudhana is Satyaki's son. Huh? And Sudharman, Aniruddha and Shaivya, that foremost of men, who had learnt the science of arms under Arjuna. These and many other kings, O Lord of the earth, used to wait on Yudhishthira on that occasion. That friend of Dhananjaya, Tumvuru, and the Gandharva Chitrasena, with his ministers, and many other Gandharvas and Apsaras, well skilled in vocal and instrumental music, and in cadence, that's the rise and fall in the pitch of voice. Okay, so that means they're very good. Okay. And Kanaras, also well versed in musical measures and motions, singing celestial tunes in proper and charming voices, waited upon and gladdened the sons of Pandu and the rishis who sat in that sabha. Seated in that sabha, those bull among men of rigid vows and devoted to truth, all waited upon Yudhishthira like the celestials in heaven waiting upon Brahma. Right, so it says not even waiting upon Indra, because Indra, he's a post, you have to. Brahma, it's because everybody respects him. Right? Does that make sense? So I mentioned before, they would sport like Indra, you know, so free and having all facility, but they waited upon him as if like Brahma. Right? So we see is here is that it also mentioned that the Apsaras and the Gandharvas and the Kinaras, then they were all entertaining and that Yudhishthira and the sages, right? Then the kings, because they're there, then they get the benefit. But it was for Yudhishthira and the sages, right? Because they're from the heavenly planets. You know, they don't come here for just any king. Right? Section 5. So now that ends that section. Now, Lokapala Shabak Kayana Parva. Vaishampayana said, while the illustrious Pandavas were seated in that Shabha, along with the principal Gandharvas, there came, O Bharata, into that assembly the celestial Rishi Narada, conversant with the Vedas and Upanishads, worshipped by the celestials, acquainted with histories and Puranas, well versed in all that occurred in ancient kalpas, conversant with Nyaya and the truth of moral science, possessing a complete knowledge of the six angas, namely Shiksha Chanda Vyakaran and Nirupta. No, but then there's more. Kalpa and Jyotish. Okay, they gave here pronunciation, grammar, prosody, explanation of basic terms, description of religious rites, and astronomy. Okay? So here when they say explanation of basic terms, it means the root words, like that. You know, they try to make it look simple, but it's the root. He was a perfect master in reconciling contradictory texts and differentiating in applying general principles to particular cases, as also in interpreting contraries by reference to differences in situation. Right? Does that make sense? So he knew all the Shastras now on... With that, then he was able to do this. He was a perfect master in reconciling contradictory texts, because the texts have things that seem different. So the point is that you can reconcile them because they have one common source, right? All the branches of knowledge have a common source, right? The common principles of knowledge are there. Then you can understand how they've been applied into the particular details, so then you don't see any contradiction, right? So and then he could apply general principles to particular cases. So general principles always work. Your particular cases means you can practically apply it, right? So this is the standard, right? This then makes the Vedic good. Otherwise, most people think Vedic means you have the knowledge and it's theory. But here we see Narad Muni has the knowledge and he knows how to apply it perfectly. Time, place, and circumstance, all the contradictory things he can reconcile and make it all work very nicely. Also interpreting contraries by reference to different situations. So therefore, you can understand it as contrary because it's a different situation. Right? It's being applied here, therefore it looks like this. It's being applied there, therefore it looks like this, but it's the same thing. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. There's not much time. It's, how you say, you know, the main emphasis is on a particular, like, ceremony or something, so therefore you have a snack. Like that. Let's say that you have a informal situation, people are just dropping by at an odd time, therefore you have a snack. Right? You're having a very formal situation, a very elaborate, you know, occasion, therefore you have a big formal meal. Right? Or, you know, you have an informal situation, just friends over, and then you have a big meal. But now there's so many contradictions here. Right? So depending upon what is the situation, that would determine whether it's a snack or a full meal. So it applies both formal and informal. Right? So to be able to understand that, you know, then, because otherwise you take formal as a full meal and informal as snacks. So unless you're, you know, Gujarati, then, you know, then informal can also have full meals. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Does that make sense? Right? There are Gujaratis who never eat full meals. All they do is every 45 minutes, there's a new snack for the whole day. Like that. Yes? Why are you laughing? Oh, he's from one of those families. Right? That's okay. That makes sense. Okay. Go ahead, laugh. Go ahead. He has the right to laugh. You know. So. Okay. Acquainted with the science of morals and politics. So morals and politics go together. That's morals and politics. What would be the modern term where you combine them into one phrase?
Doesn't exist.
Politically correct.
Yeah, politically correct. Well, it doesn't exist, of course, but politically correct, right? So that means he was also politically correct. Learned, proficient in distinguishing inferior things from superior ones, right? That's where your political correct people lose it. They can't tell the difference between one or the other. They can only tell a general principle. They can't apply to details. Though they stand on their little soapbox and then they claim, it is, Hyde Park is soapboxes, right? Yeah, okay. Because America is orange crates. So. Yeah. So on your soapbox, and then, actually I should use orange crate. So you stand on your orange crate, and then you pontificate how it's, you know, the individual, and you have to consider. But then they try a general rule across the board, and so it doesn't actually become individual. Does that make sense? Like that. So we see here how qualified Narad Muni is, right? So this list is being given here, but this is a list of the standard of education. Right, so an educational institution should teach you like this, right? Then it becomes useful in your life. Then it's a lifestyle, and you can help others in theirs. Otherwise, it's just a body of knowledge. It's not a lifestyle. Does that make sense? Like that. It should be that what you do in the school, when you get out of the school, you do the same thing. Right? It shouldn't be that what you do in the school, then you get out of the school. Right? You know, anybody crams for a living. right? You know, unless you're going to a fast food place. But otherwise, anyone crams for a living? No. Does that make sense? You know, you party in the dorm, you do all these different things. Is that what you do for a living? No. So where is anything to do with reality, with your lifestyle that you do afterwards? It's not. You start from scratch. Suddenly now, after 20 years, they kick you out on the street and they haven't shown you what to do out there. Right? It's a problem. Like that. Yes. Skilled in drawing inference from evidence. Right? It means being able to understand things that are connected from the evidence. In other words, from Shabda you pull inference, not from Pratyaksha. Right? The modern intellectuals, they see something with their senses, then they pull the subtle from it. But they may make a mistake. But here he's taking, hear from the Shastra and then pull the inference from it. That means you're able to see it. You know, in what your life around you. So it becomes very real. Competent to judge the correctness or incorrectness of syllogistic statements consisting of five propositions. Right? Means, in other words, Nyaya has five sections. Right? You have your thesis, you have your basically your explanation of it, right? Or definition of it. You have your examples how do you say, you know, where you establish something? Proofs, yeah, your proofs. Then after that, then you reconcile it in comparison with anything that would be opposed to it. Then you give your practical conclusion. So he can tell whether something is correct or not in its presentation, that was correct, or even having been done, presented correctly, is the what is being presented, is it correct? Right, so he can identify the nyaya, right? And Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says if something is not presented according to these five, then it's not really considered academic. Like that. An academic presentation means these five. Right? The Panchanga Nyaya. Means your thesis, your definition of the thesis, your explanations of the thesis. Removing the antithesis, your synthesis, and then your conclusion. Like that. The West, they'll use thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. But they'll never use conclusion because they don't want one. Right? So they only actually deal they're dealing with four. But they only identify three. So it's not as complete. They don't make a differentiation between the thesis, which can be said in one sentence, and the definition, which may be a few sentences or a paragraph. So therefore, you know, they're very expert at waffles, but, you know, there's no butter or syrup to eat them with, you know, so they're a little dry. You know.
Yeah. When does the antithesis come in the Vedic system? Like,
when does it come? It comes, means when you make your statement, your thesis, it won't generate any doubt because no one can really understand how it's going to be applied. Right? It may give a beginning of a doubt, but you don't know how to express it because you haven't heard the explanation of the thesis. Once you explain the thesis, then you can complain. You know, if I say, Krishna is God, okay, then, you know, even the impersonalists might agree with that. Right? But then, what am I bringing out in his godness? I'm bringing out no one is equal to him or greater than him. Then the impersonalists would go, no, but we can merge into God and we're all God. So therefore, there's a doubt comes up. You know? Then you get into your explanation, and your explanation, then you defeat these doubts. Then you show how that oneness is there. Yes, the oneness is there, but it's oneness in purpose, not oneness, you know, in quality, not in quantity. And then you conclude is therefore the small should serve the big, because Krishna is God, therefore we should serve him. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes? He was capable of answering successfully Brihaspati himself while arguing with definite conclusions properly framed about religion, wealth, pleasure, and salvation. Right? In other words, your conclusions have to conclude all those. And then for us, then bhakti. Otherwise, if it's only artha and you only argue artha, you will be wrong. Because artha has no meaning without dharma. Dharma's purpose is moksha. Right? Does that make sense? So it won't work. It sounds great, but that's why no one's satisfied. That's why there's unlimited books on the subject, a new one coming out every month, because they can't answer it completely because they leave out the four. They only deal with one. Right? They'll hint at the others, but they don't deal properly. Of great soul and beholding this whole universe, above and below and around, as if it were present before his eyes, he was master of both the Shankya and Yoga systems of philosophy, ever desirous of humbling the celestials and suras by fomenting quarrels amongst them. He always comes and starts a fight between them because they're proud. Someone's not proud, there's no fight. So he, you know, takes great pleasure in humbling them by creating a fight. Fight always creates humility, right? Right? Either you will go for it so much you will be destroyed, or you take the humble position and surrender, right? Like that. Both these courses have been tried, and the surrender generally works better. Like that. Conversant with the sciences of war and treaty, proficient in drawing conclusions by judging of things not within direct ken, right? Direct ken? Ken? Oh, not within direct ken. So that would mean it's Barbie? As also in the six sciences of treaty, war, military campaigns, maintenance of posts against the enemy, and stratagems by ambushcades. An ambushcade, right? You ambush, I guess, with an ambushcade, okay. Like you have a motorcade, you have an ambushcade. That's, I like that. And reserves. Okay, so these are all the different things that a king learns, right? So this is all the Kshatriya science. He is a Brahmin, knows this. That's how he can be a Brahmin for kings. Right? Does that make sense? He is a thorough master of every branch of learning, fond of war and music. Right? Two seem to go together here. Incapable of being repulsed by any science or any course of action, and possessed of these and numerous other accomplishments. Okay, so that means that repulsed by means you can't defeat him in anything, right? Or at the same time, is there's not a science or an action that he can't accommodate and contemplate and discuss. Like you see, there's some people, they don't want to discuss or hear about a certain branch of science. Like that. So, but he has no problem in working with any of them. And within any of them, you can never defeat him. Right? He knows how, you know, in other words, he demands, right? Okay. And possessed of these and numerous other accomplishments, the Rishi, having wandered over the different worlds, came unto that Shabha. The celestial Rishi of immeasurable splendor, endued with great energy, was accompanied, O monarch, by Parijata, and the intelligent Raivata, and Somya, and Sumukha. Here's another. Possessing the speed of the mind, the Rishi came thither and was filled with gladness upon beholding the Pandavas. The Brahman, on arriving there, paid homage unto Yudhishthira by uttering blessings unto him and wishing him victory. Beholding the learned Rishi arrive, the eldest of the Pandavas, conversant with all rules of duty, quickly stood up with his younger brothers. Bending low with humility, the monarch cheerfully saluted the Rishi and gave with due ceremonies a befitting seat unto him. The king also gave him kine and the usual offerings of the argya, including honey and the other ingredients. So what's including honey? Yes, Madhuparka. So that means Madhuparka is, the Argya is any great person, but Madhuparka especially is like the king Narad Muni comes, Vyasadeva comes, like that, then Madhuparka comes out. Right? So Argya and Madhuparka, then you know it was a very nice and formal ceremony like that. Conversant with every duty, the monarch also worshipped the Rishi with gems and jewels with a whole heart. Receiving that worship from Yudhishthira in proper form, the Rishi became gratified. Thus worshipped by the Pandavas and the great Rishis, Narad, possessing a complete mastery over the Vedas, said unto Yudhishthira the following words, bearing upon religion, wealth, pleasures, and salvation. So now, what he is said, we will hear tomorrow. It's interesting, because what he'll do is ask questions. But every one of those questions is an instruction. Right? In other words, it's a rhetorical question, not where it's giving an answer, but it's actually giving an instruction. Right? Like that. So he'll give a whole list, and you can understand from that how you manage a kingdom. Like that. Just by his questions.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Parimahani.